Well, we just finished a great three-game homestand, three wins from Michigan. Sometimes it's easy to win at home. Now we got to prove if we can win on the road. That's the question that everybody has. We'll find out this week against Northwestern in Evanston, Illinois. We've got Nico Collins, Ben Bredesen, LaVert Hill coming up. We'll answer some questions. We've got a whole lot on this week's edition of In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
This is going to be one of those games where we look at and we say, okay, is it real or is it not?
Their crowd's going to be intense playing us.
You need to be twice as sharp as you are at home.
It's Big Ten now, so we can't take a game off.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Northwestern in the Big Ten. It's always been one of those teams that they're never going to really jump up and beat you. They did to me in 95, but historically, they're not going to be a team that goes out and puts up a performance where they beat you, but they are not going to beat themselves. Head coach Pat Fitzgerald played at Northwestern, has coached there for a long time, will be one of those coaches that has his team ready to play. They will not make mistakes, and they will not beat themselves. But we'll find out how Michigan can beat them. But before we do that, Brian Bush, are you going to join us today?
I sure am, John. I think the listeners can notice you're a little more calm this week. Is that fair?
It is. You know, I was excited last week for a lot of reasons. It was the opening of the Big Ten football season. That gets me excited every year. It doesn't matter who it is. Then for the fact of the matter was, we had Scott Frost coming to town. We had Nebraska coming to town. And that excited me quite a bit. And to be able to do what we did against them and show the Big Ten West what they have coming for them, because we play a couple more teams on the West and make our statement in the Big Ten. It was a statement game for Michigan. So we'll find out what we can do on the road this week against Northwestern.
So before we get into our normal seven from 77, I want to take us through a John Jansen seven from 77 from this week against Nebraska. You were in rare form. It started during the post-game show after SMU.
Yeah, and both games were very close. They lost heartbreaking a game to Colorado last week, an old conference rival, and then here today. Troy's a good football team. I mean, they're not.
Hey, Brian. Yeah. Brian, you don't get any moral victory points. There's no moral victory column. It's win or lose. Right now, they're 0-2. Right now, Michigan's 2-1. That's all that matters.
I'm trying to play the John Jansen role of here. Don't look at the record. Don't look at it too much. Just because Nebraska's 0-2 doesn't mean they're anything to take lightly. I'm trying to learn from you, and you're calling me out?
Hey, I play both sides of the ball now. I get that opportunity.
Yeah, see, John, you were a little different last week. A little more hostile, a little more antsy.
Yeah, because it's the start of the Big Ten season, and our players were too. I mean, when they came out, they made that Nebraska team quit in the first quarter. They made them quit. That's special. And that's something that we haven't seen in a number of years at Michigan for a defense. We've had a dominant defense. We still have a dominant defense. But our offense went out there and said, today is our day. We're going to get up. We're going to stay up. We're going to pound you. We're going to push you all over the field, because this is what it means to play in the Big Ten.
I think it was more, John, than just the Big Ten. It was Nebraska. This was last Wednesday's podcast, if you didn't catch the end. This is great.
Hey, we're getting into fall. Leaves are falling. It's time to carve some pumpkins. I might even carve a Nebraska symbol into my pumpkin this week, just so I can smash it on my way to the stadium. Just absolutely smash it, which I think that actually sounds like a lot of fun.
Did you do that, John?
I smashed a lot of things on Saturday, and pumpkins weren't one of them. I do have a couple pumpkins, but they cost me dollars, and I'm not ready to smash them. There will come a time though when they get a little wilted and they start to decay a little bit. There's nothing better than smashing a pumpkin.
Yeah, most Michigan fans are Ohio State, Michigan State, Notre Dame rivalry folks. I think Nebraska's one for you. This was early Saturday before we really got going on the pregame show.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Doug. Do you sense something different with John this week? I mean, it's there. He's fired up.
There's certain games he really wants to win, certain coaches he really wants to beat.
Oh, my gosh.
This is physically and emotionally easy, in any way we can.
Rain it in.
Scott Frost.
And after last week's, my kids listened to last week's podcast, and they were walking around the house just egging me on. They'd walk by me and say, "Scott Frost," and because they knew it, it would just make me cringe. And so it was. They thought it was hilarious. I ended up going to the game. I think I had a shirt on backwards. My socks weren't matching. It had me all. I was so excited for them to play Nebraska. And I tell you what, I'm excited because I don't know if you know this, but I hold a grudge. And I have a couple of them. Scott Frost is one of them, and a good friend of mine. And it doesn't mean that I can still be your friend, but I could hold a grudge. One of those guys, Pat Fitzgerald. Pat Fitzgerald in 1995, after they beat us in the Big House, which I have a hard time saying it's a hard, but it's a part of history. You gotta have to live with it. You gotta deal with the things that happened in your past. I'm dealing with it now. He ran around our field with one of those Northwestern flags and didn't plan it like Baker Mayfield did last year, but it didn't matter. And I still have nightmares every time we play Northwestern of Pat Fitzgerald running around the field with his uniform on, his helmet off, with that Northwestern flag. And if I can, I'm going to find the film of that. I'm going to show the guys what they're going against this week, because nobody is allowed to do that in the Big House. And I told Pat, if he ever does that again, I will be on the sidelines and I'm going to take him out. So it's something that's bothered me for, what is it, 95, 23 years. And it will bother me on Saturday, because I guarantee you what, when Michigan beats Northwestern, you're not going to see any Wolverines running around the field with a flag, because we expect to. That's something that we've done before, we expect to do again, and we expect to do on a regular basis.
Boom. There's the John. Let's bring it every week, yeah. Man. Let's bring it every week.
You got me. Yeah, I tell you what, there's. I don't think there's a Big Ten team I don't have a grudge against. I'm not sure. You know, I didn't play against Maryland, but...
Rutgers?
Rutgers, I hold a grudge because I have to go to Jersey. I have to go to New Jersey. I mean, I lived over there for a while when I was with the Skins, and we'd go up and play in the Meadowlands, and it's just never a good trip. Nothing ever happens good, especially the only thing I like about it, and I talked about this last week in our 10 seconds, was saying the city, Piscataway. I think that's fun, saying Piscataway. Maybe I'm the only one. I don't know.
No, it's a good word. It's a good word. All right. So you're fired up again. We've got a little more Nebraska John. I like it. Yeah. Let's go into the real seven for 77. A third of the way through the regular season, Michigan hopes there are 14 or 15 games at the end of this deal. But let's go through the first four games. Broad strokes. Number one, your thoughts on the offense.
Well, improved. Improved from week one against Notre Dame. Improved from the first half of Notre Dame, because I think we came out in the second half and we were a better offensive team and we still had a chance to win. Then you look at what we did against Western Michigan, SMU, and then last week against Nebraska. There's no question this offense is improved, and there's still a lot of improvement to be done, but the ability to run the football, the ability to consistently throw the football downfield and hit guys like Nico Collins and Donovan Peoples-Jones, and the ability of Shea Patterson to make things happen has improved our offense. And you can see the confidence that Shea plays with. You can see the confidence that our offensive line is now playing with. You can see the confidence that the whole offense is emitting right now, and that's a good feeling. I like to wrap myself. If it was a blanket, I'd wrap myself up in it, and I'd be nice and cozy warm right now.
Fair enough. Number two, broad strokes thoughts on the defense.
Same thing, improved. When you look at what – and I didn't expect our defense in that first two quarters of the season to play the way they did. But since then, they've been a dominant defense. They're still, top three in the country in total defense, top three in the country in passing defense. And I think some of that is covered up by the fact that we had, especially against SMU, a number of pass interference calls. And those things are still a work in progress. We're still working on ironing those things out, but it was better last week. And this is an aggressive defense, and they've got to learn that you can't always just attack the ball carrier. If that's your assignment, then yes, get after it. And we've got guys that can do that at every position. But one of the things that I saw last week, and there was a play towards Nebraska was heading towards the north end zone, and it was an option play to the right. Chase Winovich was the defensive end, and he did a great job of sitting and staring at that quarterback, making him pitch the ball. And then we had a linebacker outside that was a Josh Ross that made the tackle on the running back, and that was textbook an example of, this is my role, this is what I'm going to do to help Michigan's defense and stop this play. And each guy fulfilled their role, and it was a shutdown play. So when I look at the improvement that our defense has had, that's really where I see it, is in terms of their patience and following through on their assignments.
Number three, special teams. Where do the special teams stand going into week five in Northwestern?
Well, I tell you what, our special teams, that's been a bright spot for us, a real bright spot. We've had a lot of them, but Ambry Thomas with his kick return against Notre Dame was special. Donovan Peoples-Jones with what he's been able to do in the return game. And our punter, Will Hart, I think the last three games, he's averaged over 50 yards a punt. That's unheard of. That's special. So when you get performances like that in special teams, that gives us field position. That gives us momentum. It gives us points. There's so many things that it gives our football team. And when you can be good on defense, special teams, offense, all three phases of the game, you are a very hard team to beat.
Number four, through four games, who's the most improved player on this team, John?
You know, I look at Zach Gentry, and I knew that he was going to be a good player coming in. And some of this has to do with just the development of Shea Patterson and him being comfortable spreading the ball around. But he has 10 catches, 148 yards. He's the number two leading receiver on this team. He is a guy that, over the course of his career, came in as a quarterback, made the transition to tight end. And when I watch him in downfield, he's a huge target. And his ability to get open, make plays, is great. When I watch him in the run game and his run blocking, it is so much improved from what he's done in the past. When I look at him and I see, not only is, and I'll take Karan's two runs that he had, the big runs that were off the left side, they were the same play. It was a little kick out block by Ben Bredesen, and Zach Gentry was a tight end. The first play, the outside linebacker ends up playing down inside of him, crossing his face, and he takes the right steps, is in position and blocks him and basically caves down the whole left side of that line, which allows Karan the ability to get out there and Ben Bredesen to be in front of him and create this gaping hole. The next play, it's the same play, but the outside linebacker stays outside of Zach. So he bluffs him and then goes down inside to block the inside linebacker, seals off the inside. But that little pause that he had, that little bluff on the linebacker, allowed Ben to pull and get right behind where Zach was. And when Zach left, Ben was in great position to take that linebacker, kick him out. Karan Higdon fit right in there. And then number 23 was their safety, and I don't remember his name, but there was this gigantic hole, and he had to make a decision. All right, I'm going to try and take away the inside and use the sideline as another defender. Well, as soon as he took that step inside, Karan, with his speed, was able to hit the sideline and be gone for a touchdown. And it was all set up by the fact that Zach Gentry didn't panic. He didn't say, well, my job is inside, I've got to go right there. He set up that linebacker, went down, made his block. And those little things that he's doing in the run game help his teammates. And it also helps him because it puts him in a better position to block that linebacker. So those are the nuances that I see where he's doing a great job of understanding it's not always about getting the block, but it's about helping your teammate in route to getting your block.
Number five on our 7 from 77. There have been a ton of really cool plays, of big time plays this year for Michigan. What's one that stands out the most?
Well, the one that stands out for me, and most people probably wouldn't pick this play, but if people understand me, which I believe they do, we were on the 1 yard line against Nebraska, and our offensive line, when Shea Patterson took the snap, they had a surge. and they put that Nebraska defensive line 2 yards into the end zone. And Ben Mason was, it was one of his three touchdowns that he had last weekend, was able to basically walk in the end zone, stand there, and celebrate because he wasn't touched. He didn't have to avoid anybody. He didn't have to do anything. He just had to hold onto the ball and walk into the end zone. That push was impressive, and that's something that I haven't seen from an offensive line at Michigan in, and I got to be honest with you, it's probably been 10 years since we've seen a push like that. And they got it on that, and that's a great confidence builder for this offensive line. Then they had another one where they were on about the 5 or 6 yard line. It was, again, Ben Mason carried the ball, and he went untouched by human hands into the end zone. And that was all because we were able to get good push up front. And that is, when a guy does that as an offensive lineman, when I accomplish that feat and I take another man and I move him where I want to move him, there's a confidence that builds inside you. There's a fire that builds inside you that all of a sudden you, I want the next opportunity. I want to prove it again. So when we go to Northwestern, I feel bad for Northwestern's defensive line because now our guys have felt that fire. They felt that pleasure of moving a defensive lineman and making him do what we want him to do. We imposed our will on that Nebraska front. And that's, to me, that is a symbol of exactly where this offensive line needs to get to and needs to do on a weekly basis.
Well, from the least surprising part of the season of John choosing an offensive line manhandling as his play of the first four games, let's go to the biggest surprise of the season, John. What or who has been the biggest surprise of 2018 for Michigan football?
I think the biggest surprise to me has been Dylan McCaffrey. And at some point this season, he's going to have to come in and win a game for us. And I hope I think Shea Patterson is going to get hurt, and I hope he doesn't. But he's a mobile guy. And at some point, whether it's just on a play where he does something and his helmet comes off, you have to come off for a play. That could be a third and long situation, a key play in the game where Dylan McCaffrey has to go in there and be ready. He's proven that he could do it. He did it against Notre Dame in a very tough road environment. Came in, not warming up, not taking any snaps, and didn't miss a beat. He went in last week, and I know his big run for a touchdown was called back, but the ability of him to make plays and to go in at a moment's notice and be productive has been impressive to me. And not only has he been productive, but he's looked really good doing it. So I'm really excited with our depth at that quarterback position, and I'm very excited because Dylan McCaffrey's a great kid, comes from a great family, obviously, and we all know he's a great football family, so great to see him, and he's really has been my biggest surprise.
Bright future ahead, no question. Final question on 7 from 77. This is not a finished product, still 8 regular season games to go. Area that most needs to improve for Michigan to keep on humming along?
Well, it's an area that's improved but needs to continue to improve, and that's the consistency of our run game. So we've proven that we can be a good defense. We've proven we can shut teams down. We've proven that we're good on special teams. We can score touchdowns. We can get field position. We've proven that, time and time again, that we can stretch the field in the pass game. Shea Patterson has proven that he's a good quarterback. Last week was the first time where I looked at our offensive line, and they proved to me that they can be a good offensive line. And when you look at the stats, not good against Notre Dame. We only had, 58 yards rushing in the entire game. Then we play Western Michigan, and we have great production. Then we play SMU, and it seems to me like we took a little bit of a step back. It was a 3-4 defense. It wasn't something that they had seen before. There were some communication things that they had to work on. Then they come back against Nebraska, and again, a 3-4 defense, and they fixed some of those things, and it was their aggression that I really saw come out in them. And so they've proven that they can do it once. As soon as you do it once, now you've set the expectation. I expect them to do that every time. I expect them to go to Northwestern and be a dominant offensive line. I expect them to come home against Maryland, homecoming, be a dominant offensive line. They do that these 2 weeks, then all of a sudden Wisconsin Badgers come to town. We've got the confidence that we can play with a very good defense and be a dominant offensive line. So that needs to continue to improve week after week.
Well, that's today's 7 from 77, John, and we're going to talk to a few players about Northwestern, about moving forward here on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited. We've got Nico Collins coming in, Ben Bredesen, and Ben's going to actually talk about the consistency of this offensive line and where they are now as compared to where they were at the beginning of the year. And LaVert Hill, I get a chance to talk to him about what it means to get that interception and how it feels and when he makes that decision to either pass breakup or get the pick and what happens after he has it. So great interviews coming up. Again, Nico Collins, Ben Bredesen, LaVert Hill, enjoy yourselves. Nico Collins joins us again on In the Trenches. Nico, when people in the media talk, we at the beginning of the season we were talking about we got to develop a deep threat.
Yeah.
Now they're talking our deep threat's Nico Collins.
Yeah.
When you hear that, how does it make you feel?
I feel great hearing that. You know, I'm just going out there, just playing football. You know, just showing everybody what I can do. You know, what I'm capable of doing. And, you know, everybody say I'm a deep threat, and I'm a deep threat. You know, but I also run a lot of other routes, too.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like deep ball is my go-to.
Deep ball is your go-to.
Yeah.
Does it feel better? Let's take a touchdown out of the equation right now. Would you rather catch a deep ball and get tackled right away or catch a two-yard route and take it 50 yards?
Two-yard route, take it 50 yards. Yeah, two-yard route.
Put it on the highlight film.
Yeah, highlights. Yeah, the yak after the catch, yeah, you know what you see, what I can do with the ball.
Where do you think Michigan's offense is right now compared to where we started out week one?
I feel like we making improvements. You know, week one, you know, as haven't played a game since last year.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like ever since we played Notre Dame, you know, we lost. But, you know, ever since then, I feel like we improved every week. And every week we're getting better, better and better. And we got a long season, so I feel like we want to improve more.
Where's the chemistry at between Shea Patterson right now and I'll keep it at the receivers, the receiving core.
Chemistry is coming good. You know, every day we practicing, you know, we found little things. And Shea is a great athlete, and he will find you. And I feel like everybody chemistry with him is just perfect, you know, because it doesn't take long to find the chemistry with Shea.
When he starts rolling around,
yeah,
and you're the deep threat, right? And
yeah,
you're already deep. what do you have to do? I mean, you come back? Do you just wave your hands, or I mean, what's the process in your mind at that point?
Just find the open spot. Just find the open spot, really. Just find where the defense isn't. You know, Shea, he gonna tell you to come back or go.
Yeah,
and you just do what he's saying. He'll throw it.
I've seen him do that. He'll point and
he paid like come back. I got you right there. He'll make the throw.
What's it like playing him with a guy that seems to have that control on the field or that command on the field?
It feel good. You know, going out there and knowing he's confident in his game. You know, I feel like his rollout game is pretty good. You know, he can make a dime pass on the run. You know, just little things like that can make him different. You know, he's a great player.
One of the things that I see for him is his accuracy is so mm-hmm. good. He's hit you, he's hit Donovan Peoples-Jones, he's hit some of the tight ends mm-hmm. in stride.
Yeah.
For some of our listeners that don't understand how important that is, what's the difference for you when you catch a ball in stride mm-hmm. and you don't even have to slow down as opposed to mm-hmm. you got to stop, you got to turn around, do some things, or adjust to the ball at all? What's the difference for you as a receiver?
A lot, because you know, a lot of people is the same great athletes as me, and you know, once you beat them, you can't slow down because you know they give them a chance to play on the ball. So it's great to catch the ball in stride, you know, in the movement, because you can make things happen when you're running with the ball.
I'm gonna ask all you guys this week that are gonna be on there. You know, we've had three good games at home.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to Evanston to play, you know, Northwestern on the road. What would it mean to you or to this team to get a good road win?
It would feel good. You know, just keep it going. Just improve another week. You know, after Northwestern, I don't know who we have.
We come back
focus
home.
On Northwestern.
Yeah, we got homecoming. With Maryland.
Yeah, Maryland. See, so there's a lot. It's Big Ten. It's Big Ten now. So we can't take a game off. But we got to keep improving every game and go out there and make it happen.
Does the intensity change at all in Big Ten play?
It does. It does.
What's it feel like out there?
It's like it's Big Ten. You know, trying to win the Big Ten championship. You know, everybody out there on the mission. Everybody out there got to do their job and make sure the team get the win.
So, being an offensive lineman,
being at home means I get to hear the quarterback. I get to hear the snap count. Mm-hmm. On the road, obviously, we're going silent cadence. Mm-hmm. Being out at a receiver, mm-hmm. are you always on silent, or are you going on a snap of the ball? Or can you, when you're at home, can mm-hmm. you hear Shea when he's under center?
Yeah, home, you can hear him. But away, like we played Notre Dame away, you couldn't hear nothing. You know, his line, you just moved. I just moved when the ball moved. Or moving something with Donovan. Like, if I'm off the ball and Donovan on the ball, I really can't see it. So I just move. I'm kind of late off the ball a little bit. But once I'm off the ball, I'm full speed because I lost that second. So I got to go full speed.
Well, best of luck in Evanston. I can't wait to see you guys get that sweet road win.
Thank you.
Ben Bredesen joins us again on In the Trenches. Ben, first time that we've talked since you were elected by your teammates as captain. What did that mean to you?
Yeah, it's a huge honor. Just to be named a captain of this team, especially with the history of this program. Words couldn't express it for me, and I was just I was really taken back by it and very honored by my whole team.
Has it changed your approach to practice, game week, anything that you do differently now?
I wouldn't say differently, but it definitely puts an emphasis on it for me. You can't take any reps off now because all eyes are on you as one of the leaders of the team. If somebody sees you taking some plays off, then it's okay for everyone else to do it. So that's something Karan and I have really talked about and emphasized that when we're working out or working in practice or really anything we do, the focus on the details has got to be huge, especially for us, and then it's going to trickle down to everybody else.
Talking about focus on details, the little things that the offensive line's doing right now in terms of some of the footwork, the double teams, the head placement, how much has that improved from week one to going into week five?
Yeah, I would say our technique across the board has really gone up. One thing especially would be the double teams, I would say. I think the camaraderie between the guys and finding the way the fit is going to work, it's definitely made some big strides for us in these last few games. And last week we saw it. We were able to get some great movement on there, especially on the goal lines. And we were just, we really controlled the front.
I think it was the very first run last week that Karan had. He didn't score on, but you pulled out, and I know you've got a choice between the linebacker, depending on the front, the outside linebacker or the corner. I think the first one you had the corner. I know what it's like, but tell our fans what it's like when you get out there and you see a little fella.
Oh, it was beautiful. They started the linebacker outside of the tight end, and then he slid down. And, we knew they were going to bring the safety off the edge then. And I knew it was going to be a quick pull and that guy was going to be right in my face. But, we got a good angle. Tight ends got their down blocks and I was able to just get on that safety right away. And then, the best thing in the world is getting a big block and then just looking up, hearing the roar of the fans and turning around and seeing your back run as fast as you can down the field. So, we ran that play. And, Karan didn't score. And then
you ran the same play.
Yep.
That you scored on.
We ran the same play coming out of the sidelines. I looked right at him. I said, if you get caught again, I'm never pulling this for you again. And
it's like a returner getting caught by the kicker. You can't get caught twice.
I said, you better not get caught again. So, he laughed, took it to the house. And, we went down there and celebrate. And, of course, give him a big hug, and he goes, "There, I'm making sure I'm never getting caught for you." So, I'd love to see that.
What's the feeling like? Again, most of these questions I ask, I already know the answer, mm-hmm. but I want to hear it from you. Our fans want to hear it from you. When you hit that little guy, you hear the crowd. You talked it a little bit, but I was standing there talking to Doug Karsh, who does our sideline reporting, and I said, "Wait till you see this replay because you're basically laying on top of this little fella." Mm-hmm. You hear the crowd, and you turn around and you see Karan running downfield. Do you have the same reaction every once? Or I would have, where you look around, you look for the little yellow hanky, you don't see it, and then all of a sudden it's time to party.
Absolutely. That's one of the big jokes around the O-line is kind of the thing I was known for is you never run field on it. Never run downfield
don't
on a
waste
big
any
play
energy.
Before you check for flags. And we did that, and then just going along with that, there was Dylan's big run later on, and I always was joking around with Chuck, never run downfield until you check for flags. and he sprinted 70 yards down the field to go celebrate with Dylan, and it got called back. First thing I said to him when he got off the field was, you better make sure that you don't have to come running back for those, because that's going to take a lot out of you.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, young guys never listen, do they?
No, never do. He said, I got excited. I said, hey, I've done that too. That was your one. Don't do it again.
So you already talked about talking to Karan when he comes out of the huddle, and you know what the play is going to be. Ben Mason. Mm-hmm. He's in the huddle there. You're on the 1 yard line. I think his longest run was what, 6 yards?
If that, yeah.
Yeah. You know he's going to get the ball.
Yep.
Do you look at him and say anything, or just? I mean, what's it like in the huddle when that play is called? Does he have anything to say?
He gets really excited when he's about to get handed the ball. He gets a huge smile on his face. His eyes are just popping. And we ran it earlier in practice. Earlier that week in practice, same play, and he just ran over Caesar, trampled him. I think he might have even stepped on his hand and just kept running. And Caesar got up all sore, and so right before the play, I looked at Ben and I said, look, I don't mind if you run me over on this one, but you better get in there. And I kind of regret saying it because I took one right in the back.
Those fullbacks, they never change. No, I used to have those guys all the time.
Just ran right into my back and knocked me down. But I told him, if you get in, it's fine. We'll move past it. But, he just put his head down and just went in there on that first one.
Yeah, that's the difference between fullbacks and running backs. Running backs look to avoid contact. Fullbacks seem to seek it.
Yeah, exactly. No, he definitely seeks it.
When you look at going to Northwestern, all right, week one, we obviously lost on the road. We had three great home victories. What is there anything different that you'll do going to Evanston than maybe you guys did in week one in South Bend?
I don't think we're going to change a whole lot. I think the focus is just a lot higher with the guys. I think everybody realizes what it takes to win on the road, and that you need to be twice as sharp as you are at home because the game's probably just not going to tilt your way. It's just the way it works when you're, at home or on the road. So I think the preparation is going to be a lot, very crisp this week, maybe more than these weeks past just because we're on the road. And then, once we get, down to Chicago and settle into the hotel, the focus is going to be high, making sure that everyone knows their assignments. And then, once we hit the field, we'll see what happens.
This is going to be probably it will be the closest game that we play to your hometown. You're going to have a handful of people coming to see you?
A couple people are coming. For some reason, everybody wanted to come out last week against Nebraska, so that was fine, got the home game. But I'll have a few aunts, direct family's going to be going down. So mom was really happy with the way the schedule worked out this year. She can make just about every single game. The Rutgers one's far, so I don't think she's going to hit that one. But the far games seemed to all be at home, and then the close ones were on the road. So she was pretty happy with it.
Well, I got to be honest with everybody that you had wanted to come last week. Nebraska coming to town, Scott Frost. What was it like to finally have that game where there's been a lot of talk about the offensive line, a lot of pressure? It really feels like the monkey's got to be off your back now.
Yeah, Coach Brown hit it on Friday. He said, boys, we just need a game where everybody just lets loose. And he's like, this is a fun game. Football's fun. Everybody's playing uptight. Just relax, have fun, and just go blow somebody out. And then the next day we did just that. So, as an O-line, it was fun to see just us do that, just let loose and unload on somebody. So to be able to move the front like we did and open the holes for the backs, were hitting them. Our receivers did an outstanding job blocking. So, those 10, 15 yarders turned into 40 and 50 yard touchdowns. It was a fun football game, fun Saturday.
And I got to say this too, it was a thing of beauty. You guys are on the 1 yard line, and the movement you guys had up front on one of Ben Mason's touchdowns, every Nebraska defensive lineman was back into the end zone. And that's got you. When you turn the film on, you got to come to the sideline and tell Coach Warner, wait till you see that one, because it was impressive, and it had to feel so good.
No, it definitely felt good. I didn't realize we got as much push as we did at the time. I didn't see the replay on the scoreboard, but then watching the film on Sunday, you rewind it, you're like, damn, we really pushed the entire front back 2 full yards.
Yeah,
they were 2 yards deep in the end zone, and Ben could have just walked in, and it's a nice feeling as an O-lineman, seeing that you can have that much movement on the goal line against a Big Ten team.
Does that give you confidence to say we can do that next week, and then we can do that. You know, we should be able to do that on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I mean, once you show it, you should be able to do it all the time now. So now that we've proven to ourselves and everybody that we can do that, and we can dominate a defensive front like that, you know, we are going to hold ourselves to that standard every single week.
Being inside, you've obviously worked with a couple of centers. Caesar is in his first year working at center. How has he developed in terms of his communication of, you know, who the mic is, where the protection's going, where the blocking schemes are going? How has he developed over the last four games?
Yeah, I think he's done a great job, especially these last, you know, these last, this is home stretch. You know, he had, you know, he had some things to work on after Notre Dame, he felt like, and he's taken care of all those and more. You know, he comes into the meeting room, you know, he has his special meetings with, you know, Coach Warner, making sure that he gets all the calls down, and you know, he knows exactly what he's supposed to do and what we're all supposed to do on every single play against every look. So it's nice having that base in the center in the center position for us, where, you know, say, you know, one of us maybe has a questionable look, he can figure everything out for us, and then you know, as long as we're all on the same page, something's going to go right. So it's nice having him in there.
So the first game that he played at center on the road against Notre Dame, it's a tough way to start as a center position.
It is tough.
When we go to Evanston, he's going to have his head between his legs, you know, if it's a silent count, half, mm-hmm. you know, half the time.
Yep.
What can you as a guard do to help him so that when he raises his head up, he knows what's going on?
Yeah, once he puts his head between his legs, you know, I become his eyes on the field. So, you know, if they bring a blitz late, I'm usually the one that has to make the adjustment for him and make the call for the entire line, just so that, you know, obviously he can't see anything, and so that he knows if there's a linebacker blitzing in his face, he better be ready to go, because that guy's going to be there as soon as his head pops up. So, you know, we worked on it. We worked on it a lot, and the Notre Dame week, we're going to work on it a lot this week, and I think we got to get a pretty good feel for it. So, you know, he trusts me, and I've got his back, so I'm going to make sure he doesn't get his head taken off.
Hey, that's what O-linemen do.
Yep.
Appreciate you joining me. Thanks for stopping by.
Yep, thank you.
LeVert Hill joins me on In the Trenches. LeVert, this is the first time I've had a chance to talk to you. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I appreciate the opportunity.
When you hit the field, right now you are leading the Michigan Wolverines in pass breakups.
Right.
What, take me through the anatomy of a pass breakup, and, you know, what position do you have to be in? When do you choose to either try and pick it off or knock it down? I mean, just give me a little bit of insight of, because I'm a former offensive lineman. I didn't have a chance to do what you do, so I want to know how do you get to that position?
I say the ultimate goal is to catch an interception, but when you feel like that you can't make the play, you just got to stick your hand out and just hope for the pass deflection.
When you are going for that pass deflection, there's been such a, it seems like our officials are so ticky-tack this year, right, in terms of the pass interference. Does that play into how aggressive you can be to go after that ball?
No, our coach always tends to just keep being aggressive, just keep playing, just don't let up, and just don't worry about the referee sometimes, and just play hard as you can.
How do you get past knowing that, okay, the officials are calling it this way? Does it affect you in the game, or do you just, like your coach tells you, just stay aggressive?
Yeah, our coach tells us just brush it off and just play the next play. That's just it.
When you do have that moment where you know you're going to get at least a shot at an interception, what's going through your mind?
Just hope I catch the ball, just hope I hang on to it, and just make a play from there.
As soon as you do, where do your eyes go? What's the vision? What are you guys trained to look for, blockers or just head to the end zone?
Just see the end zone. Just see you getting there. Just run as fast as you can just to get there.
What makes, when you look at film and you're breaking down the opponent's receivers, what makes a good receiver?
Just the way how he counters the corner, like if he's trying to press him or if he's playing off, just to see how his shoulders move and just how his hips move and just see how physical he is like that.
If you get a guy that's physical, does that change your approach to man-to-man coverage?
No, I just know that I have to be more aggressive because I just know that he's coming after me like I'm coming after him. So you just got to just – your heart got to be bigger.
What challenges you When you look at a receiver and you say, okay, he does this really good, that's going to be tough for me. Yeah. What is it that, what is it that a receiver can do to make things tough for you?
I just say, like, if he's quick or strong, I just got to see how the receiver is, just to see, like, what stuff that he does better and stuff like that.
When you're in a meeting room with Coach Zordich, now Coach Zordich obviously played the position. Are there times where you ask him, you know, Coach, what would you do in this situation?
Yeah, so Coach Zordich gives us that opportunity to ask him questions because he's our coach. So he'll just tell us what we should do or what think he should have done in this situation, stuff like that. So, yeah.
Do you look at the receivers and say, okay, here's their number one receiver? Do you go up to Coach and say, I want that guy?
No, I just trust in my other corners, such as David Long and BY. I just know all three of us can handle him. So it don't matter, like, who he is.
Is there a competition in that room of who can get the most pass breakups, who can get the interceptions?
Like, so the whole secondary got a little thing, like, whoever just gets the most interceptions right now. So Josh leading the secondary right now, so hats off to him right now.
Four games in, all right, yeah. We're in the Big Ten play. Is there a difference between playing a Big Ten opponent and the three games leading up to the Big Ten season?
I say yes, because the Big Ten is our conference, and we trying to compete for a conference championship and a national championship. So we just take one game at a time, basically, but it's Big Ten play now, so this is our conference, so we got to stand strong.
Do you look around and watch the other teams play and you go, okay, well, Wisconsin lost to BYU, or Purdue is doing this, or, you know, we've got to play these other teams. Do you look at that and say, compare Michigan to that and say, okay, well, this is where we're at, this is where we need to be to compete with these other teams?
No, so after our game, I'll just watch a couple games because I probably know a couple players, like, mm-hmm. in the Big Ten, so I just watch them, but I don't really think about, like, if they lose, such and such happen.
Any receivers in the Big Ten that you knew in high school or through the recruiting process that you're looking forward to playing against?
KJ Hamlin from Penn State.
Yeah.
I knew him growing up in high school, and that's about it, really.
Do you talk trash at all on the field? You don't have to tell me what you say. I just want to know, are you a talker?
No, I mean, if you say something to me, I have the right to respond. So I don't really say I talk trash, but if you hollering, I holler back at him.
Yeah. So now we play Penn State. You're lined up against your buddy. Yeah. Are you gonna, you know, you just wink at him, or?
I mean,
you let him know ahead of time what's coming.
I mean, I know he's gonna talk trash, so I just got to be prepared for that and just feel me talk a little smack too.
What would it mean now that we're 1-0 in the Big Ten? To get on the road, we're going to Northwestern, to get a good road victory.
It'd be pretty good because it'd be our first one this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so just getting that little away atmosphere, because I know their crowd's going to be intense playing us. So it'd be a very good win for us.
What's better, a win at home like you had against Nebraska,
yeah,
or a road win where the crowd's going nuts and then LaVert Hill makes a play and they go silent?
Yeah, I say a road win just to silence the crowd a little bit. Because, I mean, I love our fans, but just getting a win at somebody else's house is really good, too.
Well, I appreciate you spending some time with us. Good luck on Saturday.
Thank you.
Well, a big thanks for Nico Collins, Captain Ben Bredesen, and LaVert Hill for stopping by, taking time out of their busy schedule to talk to me. Brian, this is one of my favorite parts of the show. How many questions do we have today?
We have plenty, but before we get into those, I want to go back to maybe my favorite part of the season from the tailgate show this past Saturday. For fans who did not hear this, not just for the fact, but for the reaction from Doug and John.
It's a little known fact, the Stanford Tree came about because of a joke the band played during a debate about what the school should change their nickname to. It used to be Indians. They brought the tree out during some halftime shows along with a steaming manhole and a French fry. The tree was the hit and has been a part of it ever since. That is real.
Did you just say a steaming manhole?
Correct. Yes. Shockingly, that didn't hit.
They could have been the Stanford steaming manholes.
That was the mascot, not the nickname. That was the mascot. So the mascot was almost a steaming manhole. That is real.
is a little known fact.
Sorry. Okay.
John, that was awesome.
You caught me off guard, and it took me a second there to regain myself. I tell you what, out of everything that's happened throughout my either my playing days or my time in the media over the last 10 years, really, I never anticipated that steaming manholes was going to be something that I would have to comment on. But we did. And, I appreciate that little fact that, yep. That you shared. And, I do have to say those facts you add are tremendous. And that one will go down as probably the top fact that you added to our show.
Yeah. That's a Hall of Famer. What's the funniest thing that you remember from a game in your career, college, pro, anything like that? The funniest moment where you had a similar chuckle reaction to it?
Oh, man. Well, so Ethan Albright was our long snapper. And when this is back when you used to be able to, when football was a contact sport, and you used to be able to hit the center after the snap, and he, on a long snap or whether it was a field goal, he would snap and then he would just try and basically protect himself. But he would get blown up every time. And Warren Sapp we're playing the Raiders. And Ethan's wife was, and this actually, the hilarity happened on the field as well because I saw it. But Warren was rushing the gap between Ethan and myself. And what Ethan would do would snap the ball, and then he would put his arms out to the side and get as big as he could to try and just get those guys basically to fall over top of him. Well, when he did that, he grabbed Warren Sapp by the crotch, and it was basically like right in front of me. And it just – obviously it was extremely funny. And we're on the ground, and I ended up somehow on top of him, and I could not stop laughing. He was trying to figure out why I was laughing so hard. We finally got to the sidelines. And I told him what happened. And then the next day, he showed me this picture. His wife was on the sidelines taking pictures. She had a new camera, and she captured the moment perfectly. And it hung in my locker for a number of years because it was just an unbelievably great moment in NFL history.
What reaction did Sapp have? Did you hear anything from him?
No, I don't. He didn't say anything. I mean, the bottom of piles, You don't ever want to be on the bottom of a pile when there's a fumble because people are grabbing, pinching, hitting, doing whatever they can to get. If you have the ball, that's the worst position to be in. So if here's what happens. If there's a fumble or if there's a ball free on the ground, if you have the opportunity to grab it and like roll over or protect yourself, that's the ultimate goal. If you don't, if you're in a pile and that ball is still, bouncing around, you either go for it or you cower and you get out of there because people are going to, you may lose a body part. You may have a few swollen body parts just from the bottom of that pile. And it is not fun. That's for sure.
Whew, crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. All right, let's get into the questions. Good. I did not queue up John for that. So for you to recall that story that quickly, impressive. Well done.
Oh, I've got a number of stories, and we'll get a chance to get more of them out as we get through this podcast. I think I've got a couple that after I say them, we may have to edit a little bit, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Understandable. Well, with that being said, let's continue stories if you have any. Stuart via email. Do you have any good Don Brown stories that you can tell on the air?
I don't particularly have any Don Brown stories, but what I love about Don Brown is that he is intense. He is football 24/7. And when I cross him, we cross paths in the hall, and I even just say hi. He wants to talk about, a play that happened or a call that happened, and his intensity with which he talks and the words that he uses, and we talk about it a little bit after the game when he awards the due to the game to his defense, from anybody else, the dude of the game would probably be just like, hey, yeah, okay, I'm a player of the game. But when Don Brown says it, he's the dude of the game, and the way he says it, or one of his interviews he did with us, he was talking about going out there and playing with some moxie. I love hearing Don Brown and the way he talks and the intensity with which he talks about his team, about his players, the passion that he has for Michigan football. It excites me every time I talk to him.
He's a dude. He's a flat-out dude.
Like that. That's amazing. That's radio gold.
He's a dude. He's a flat-out dude.
Sounds good. Sounds really good.
Yes.
John, yeah. Gary via email. Do you ever wonder what your career would have been like if you stayed at tight end? Would you have been a dude at tight end?
Yeah, I would have been a dude at tight end. And that's the thing about athletes is that we think we can do anything. And so you put me on a football field, and if the coach said, John, we need you to do this. We need you to go out and be a great tight end. I would have done everything in my power to be a great tight end. And I believe I could have done that. But they came to me and asked me, hey, can you move to tackle? You're going to get a chance to play early. You're going to get a chance to help Michigan win. And I said, yeah, that's exactly what I want to do. It wasn't that I wanted to play tackle or tight end. I just wanted to go out. I wanted to play on the field in the big house. I wanted to run out of the tunnel knowing that I'm wearing the maize and blue. I'm wearing the greatest helmet in the history of college sports. And I'm going to be on the field helping Michigan win. And so if it was to stay a tight end and help Michigan win, yeah, I think I would have been a dude.
Speaking of the helmet, Mike via email, he says, hey, since Coach Harbaugh took over, he obviously reinstated the helmet sticker. Can you tell us how a player earns a helmet sticker, some of the qualifications, individual play, unit success, team success, or some outcomes worthy of more stickers than others?
Well, yeah, and I've got to say, too, like my freshman year, we had helmet stickers, but I was redshirted. And then Lloyd was the head coach my redshirt freshman year, and he took the helmet stickers away. And I'm actually going to have breakfast with him tomorrow morning, and I'm going to have to bring that up. I bring it up to him all the time, and he never gives me a good reason as to why we didn't have the helmet stickers anymore. Because when players the way they earn them are, you know, you get for a great block on the offensive line, you grade out at a certain percentage, you win, you have a dominant performance. I mean, if you do something special on the field, you get a helmet sticker. And the feeling of putting that sticker on and looking at your helmet going, yeah, I got another sticker. I did, you know, this sticker was for that knockout block that I had against Colorado. This sticker was for the touchdown that I opened up a hole for the A-train to go through. And, so they all have memories in them. They all have meaning to them. They all mean something to players. And, for special teamers, it's obviously, you know, you get one for taking a kick back and making a big block, or, you know, you do something special on the football field. And it's not just on game day. There are so many guys that help Michigan win that don't see the field on game day, and they come for the performance on the demo squad. So you got the rookie of the week. You've got the practice player, offense, defense, special teams. You've got all of these different things that prepare Michigan, prepare the guys that are going to be on the field on Saturday to go out there and be successful and win. And those helmet stickers are just as important as the one that Donovan Peoples-Jones probably got for taking the punt back against Nebraska. They're just as important as the one Ambry Thomas got for making a spectacular play and taking a kick back. For Devin Bush, the big hit that he got against Nebraska on the screen. Those are noticeable by everybody. The ones that aren't noticed, the unsung guys that get helmet stickers, those are just as important because they mean just as much, and they all mean victory for Michigan.
Justin on Twitter, after hearing some players talk about how they haven't even shown half their playbook yet, when do you think the offense will start to get even more creative, and how will they do it?
Well, in terms of they haven't gotten to their playbook, they've had to master the beginning of the playbook, and I think we've seen some of that mastery. And the pass game, I think, is a little bit ahead of the run game, or at least they got there quicker. That's because, Shea Patterson, he came in with experience. He played in some big games. He's able to move around. He's very accurate. So, that's been great. But to be able to run the football like we did against Nebraska opens up so much more. The ability to hit Nico, Donovan Peoples-Jones, down the field opens up so much more. The ability to have Shea Patterson keep the ball on a called quarterback run opens up so much more. Now all of a sudden, you've got all these different facets to the game. And I already talked about Zach Gentry earlier in terms of how he's developed. When you have Sean McCune, Eubanks, Gentry at tight end, you have all these different weapons. Now it's up to Jim and Pep and McElwain and Warner and all the offensive staff to figure out, we've got all these toys. How do we play with them? How do we best use them? And what a great opportunity for these guys who have tremendous experience across not just college football but the NFL to come up with different ways to utilize this great talent. And how they do it will be I'm not going to say a mystery to me, because when they do it, you're going to be like, oh, that makes sense. It'll seem so natural. But they had to master the basics before they can start to get creative. And what that does, all of a sudden, you've got these deep threats. Well, now teams can't put 8-9 guys in the box because they got to have an extra safety or they got to have an extra guy back there. Now you can hand the ball off because you're not running against a defense that's outmanning you up front. Then all of a sudden you get Caron Higdon goes for a whole bunch of yards. Then they say, well, you know what? They're running the ball, so we got to bring another guy up and stop the run. Boom, we've got man coverage back there, and you can't. I was walking next to Nico Collins after our interview. Nico is every bit as tall as I am, if not a little bit taller. And you send him downfield with the wingspan that he has, I don't know how you defend that. Because he can jump, he can run, he can catch. That's unbelievable. Zach Gentry, another nightmare mismatch. He's 6'8". He's 2 inches taller than I am. How do you defend that with a 6'1", 6'2 linebacker? You can't. So the ability that we have on offense is staggering to me, and I'm excited because as you get through the Big Ten season and teams look at the film and they say, okay, well, we're going to stop this. We're going to do this to take away Nico Collins. Well, boom, Donovan Peoples-Jones is gone. All of a sudden, Zach Gentry's gone. Caron Higdon, Chris Evans, True Wilson. We've got a lot of different weapons, and I'm excited to see how they start to use all of them.
Stu on Twitter, has the O-line and in particular the tackle play improved that much since Notre Dame, or has it been primarily a function of weaker opponents?
Well, it's always a combination of both. You know, when you look at Western Michigan, you look at SMU, you look at Nebraska, no, they didn't have the talent that we saw against Notre Dame. But I would say this, if we had played those three teams first and then we played Notre Dame, I think the results that we would see from our tackles would be much different, because you've got to be able to be in the fire. You've got to be able to be there and react and see things at game speed. And I think our tackles have learned some different tricks and some different things to help themselves out in terms of their pass sets or how they use their hands or how they use their teammates to their benefit. And yes, they are improved, and they're going to continue to improve throughout the season, because every game, every play means something, and you learn something, and you improve, and that's where this offense what this offense has really done is improved from week one to week four. This week against Northwestern, I do expect that we're going to see good sets out of our tackles, and we'll see them use their hands well. We'll see them punch people, and that's not an easy thing to do. It sounds like it, but it's not, and those are the things that I'm really excited about.
Jason on Twitter, individually, who's playing the best on the offensive line?
Oh, Ben Bredesen is having himself a pretty darn good year. When I look at guys that improve, and Ben played well, has played well throughout the season, but he's doing things because the game is starting to really slow down for him. He is starting to work on more of the nuances of, what do I do when nobody's rushing against me? You know, okay, I'm going to look over here. Oh, Caesar, looks like somebody's rushing on him. I'm going to go, chew a little bit on that bone. Then all of a sudden he looks over and he sees John Runyon's got a pretty good pass rusher. Oh, I'm going to go chew on that bone a little bit. And so there's just that when he's not covered and he's looking for work, that's where I've seen him really improve. in the run game, he is a powerful, powerful man. And when he puts his hands on you, when he takes the right steps and he delivers a blow, people move. And he has really had himself a good first four games. And I'm excited to see what he does the rest of the year in the Big Ten.
And finally, Frank via email. There were runs I swore Ben was the 2018 reincarnation of John Riggins. I really hope we get to see him get the rock more. Do you disagree? Bench Mason, he's fun to watch, John.
He is, and he is. I think if the coaches asked him to go out there and play 1-on-11, I think he'd find a way to win and score if they ask him to go out there and do anything. And those are the types of guys that you can build an offense around. So when you do get down to the 1 yard line and you've got Ben Mason, Bench Mason back there, you can hand it off to him with confidence that he's going to hold on to the ball, he's going to do it right, and he's going to do it with every bit of effort that he has. And so, yeah, you're going to see a lot more of Ben Mason. You're going to see him in special teams. He's already been a great special teams player. You're going to see him on offense doing some special things. And his ability to block has greatly improved as well. And there's no lack of passion with Bench Mason.
He's a dude. He's a flat-out dude.
Boom. Nailed it, Brian. Nailed it.
Northwestern Saturday. Looking forward to it, John.
I tell you what, this is going to be one of those games where we look at and we say, okay, is it real or is it not? Is this offensive line a dominant offensive line or are they not? Or have we corrected the penalties? Have we done all the little things that you need to do to win in the Big Ten? We'll find out in Evanston, Illinois. I'll be ready, and I hope everybody else is too. We'll talk to you again next week on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. In the Trenches with John Jansen is an exclusive presentation of IMG, America's home for college sports.